And welcome to Sounding Out with Izzy, the podcast where we have conversations with musicians, music producers, publicists, live promoters, zine makers, journalists, and more about their experiences working in the music industry as women, non-binary, and queer people. I'm your host, Isabel Korp, the founder of the queer femme music-based blog and YouTube channel, A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Well, it's our first June episode of 2023. Happy Pride Month, everybody. I'm so excited to kick off the month with a jolly old interview with bandmates and life partners Naomi Scott and Crystal Groh of Basic Bitches. It was a joy to chat with Naomi and Crystal about their latest album, It Doesn't Matter If It's Cool, and living their best lesbian cottagecore life out in the country upstate, where they can make as much noise as they want to. And without further ado, let's get right into this episode. Hi.
Hello.
How are you both?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good.
Thank you very much for inviting us.
Of course. Thank you for sending over the album. I'm obsessed.
That's what we like to hear.
So to start, would you like to state your name, what time it is, and where you are? I'll go first. I am currently in Chelsea, New York. I'm Izzy, and it is 4:46 p.m. Eastern Time.
I'm Crystal.
I'm Naomi.
It's 4:45 in Barryville, New York. So this, 1 minute time difference.
This one jump has really been going rogue on what day and time.
Oh, wow. So staggering.
Who knew?
So who are you and what is your big mission statement? If you could give me like a snappy elevator pitch for what you do.
Well, I would say that there's a song on the new record called Make Art that I think is, if we have a mission statement, that might be it these days, which is a song that's very much about making art because it makes you happy rather than because you're chasing some rock star dream. So I would say listen to that song if you want to totally get who we are in 2023.
But, and who we are is, for the record, Basic Bitches. Yeah, and I would also say on that note, the new record is called It Doesn't Matter If It's Cool. And that also kind of feels like our mission statement at the moment too, you know, that we do what we do because we love to make music, and now we do it regardless of how cool it may or may not be, because we want to do what we want to make art, we want to make music, we want to be creative. And this is how we express ourselves. And at this point, it doesn't matter if it's cool or not. We're just doing it. That's our mission statement.
I think we're making it sound like the record isn't cool. I think the record's cool, but like we moved out of the city in technically before the pandemic, but the pandemic was certainly part of it. So we're in just about upstate New York. And it kind of makes you reevaluate what you're trying to do if you're not in the middle of Brooklyn desperately trying to play 5 shows in a week or whatever. Because up here, we can play one show every 3 months and a ton of people will come and we will sell every single t-shirt we brought and it will be the best show ever. Sometimes when we play in the city, that is not our experience. So it kind of made us rethink exactly what success looks like for us, I guess.
That's really interesting. So would you say that's a big part of what prompted the move upstate? Aside from it being easier to make noise?
I think it's the other way around. We bought a house up here, which we absolutely could not do in the city. And we probably couldn't do now, but we managed to do it at a time when it was still possible to get affordable houses up here. And it's not something I ever thought I would be able to do, but we did it. And our plan was to be coming up at weekends and doing the place up. It's a bit of a fixer-upper, more of a fixer-upper than we realized. And then the pandemic happened. So we just came up here and we basically never went back. So we didn't have this, like, so it's real. We've had thunderstorms all day. I don't know if you can hear that on the audio. We didn't have this, like, beautiful, bucolic, lesbian, cottage core vision of what this was going to be. But nonetheless, here we are.
Yeah, I mean, it was a work in progress and it still is. But yeah, we just found ourselves in this position of sort of having some space and having some room and, you know, with the pandemic, having some time to think about who we are as a band and what it is that we want to do and what we stand for. And Basic Bitches has always kind of been a band about just like having a good time and like really having fun being in a band, having fun playing music. And I know that in my music career in New York City, I had certainly been in the point, gotten to the point where I was playing music, but I wasn't really having fun. And it felt like a real grind. And I don't want making music to feel like that. And so we've really tried to position ourselves in that sense to be making music that we're proud of, making music that we love, making music that feels real and honest and authentic to us, but like also making sure we never forget to just like have fun in the process, to like never lose sight of that. And for that to be the priority, you know, regardless of how long it takes or where we're making the music, that it still feels good and it still feels fun.
Oh, you, I can't hear you.
Someone was totally laying on that siren, so I had to mute for a few minutes. How did you two initially meet?
Well, I mean, I should say that Basic Bitches existed for a couple of years before Crystal joined, as me with some other drummers. Crystal is the, what did we say,
fourth and final drummer. Yeah, so we knew each other from playing in bands in the city. So I was in a couple of other bands before joining Basic Bitches, and we had played shows together, we toured together in our separate bands and were fans and supporters of each other's sort of musical endeavors in the city. And we're part of kind of a small but enthusiastic scene, like punk scene, you know, queer female punk scene in the city. And one fateful day, the drummer of Basic Bitches couldn't make it to a gig and I filled in, and that the rest is history. But I was a big fan of the band before I joined. So it was really exciting for me to have a chance to jump in. Being in this band has made me a better drummer. It's made me a better songwriter. It's made me a better musician. And I also have fun. I really have a good time in this band. So
yeah. What do you think made it different from other projects you'd been in prior? And what made this like special, would you say?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I've been in two-piece bands before, so that is something that I like that dynamic of the two-piece band. But yeah, it's kind of a tough question. I mean, I think like I was saying before, there were other bands that I've been in where it really felt like a grind and it really felt like, you know, more of an obligation than like just like a fun and inspiring creative endeavor.
I mean, I think that's the thing that happens in Brooklyn as a band, is that it's like you got to get all the shows and then you have to carry everything like
on the subway
hours of hundreds of different subway stops, and like, but you get, there is definitely a mentality that you can get stuck in that's like, which is, this is how you do it.
We just have to play as many shows as possible. We have to play all of the shows all of the time, and like, you know, that wasn't really the path I was on. You know, I don't have outsized ambitions about like what this band could be. Like, do we want people to hear our music? Yeah, of course we do. Is this my full-time job? No, it is not. So having that kind of like flexibility, like the band is a part of our lives, you know? And I think that has also made it a really fun and valuable experience for me. Like, we are married, we live together, like we play music together, like this band is just a part of our lives. It's a part of our existence together. It's not like a thing we do on the side. It's just part of our lives. And I think that has made a big difference to find the middle ground where this can just be integrated into the rest of my existence and not feel like an extracurricular burden is nice.
I mean, I will say also that the genesis of this band was a conscious effort to make a fun band. And like, it sounds ridiculous. I've been in band since I was a teenager, and a lot of them were very angsty. I was working some shit out and it felt good to me, but I didn't know how much fun it was for the audience. And I went on a tour with my friend's band, The Everyman, who are not a band anymore, but they were a New Jersey, like, fun, like, bar band. And they were going to South by Southwest, and their keyboard player could make it. So I jumped in the van. I had just moved to America, and I was like, sure, I'll see some other states. And what I took from that experience was everyone's actually having a really good time. Like, this band is making an effort to be fun and to make sure that the people who are watching them have fun. And that sounds like such a straightforward and obvious thing, but I think if you get too in your head as a serious artist musician, you can forget that. And like, it doesn't have to be fun, but there has to be like a connection point, I think. But for me, I was particularly motivated by trying to make something fun, because I realized I had been in really sad bands for a long time.
Really sad bands, like as in what kind of vibe? Like sad folk, like Nick Drake-esque classic folk, or like emo? Or,
well, my last, actually, I will say the band I was in right around the same time that I started Basic Bitches was a very short-lived three-piece called Designing Women, who actually were fun. But my last band, or my only band for years in London before I moved to America, was called Naomi Hates Humans, which really stamped a viewpoint on you before you even heard it. And it really mutated from like a solo, like anti-folk thing to a six-person, like Phil Spector multi-harmony thing. But I was also, I think musically, I still really like a lot of the stuff we did, but as a human being, I still had a lot of things to work out about myself. And a lot of those songs are about, why don't boys like me? You know, classic, you get in a groove and that's what all the songs end up being about. Because I was like 25 or whatever, and that's what 25-year-olds write songs about sometimes. So, yeah.
But yeah, and we also just, like, it's important for us as a band to be, like, cultivating a feeling of, like, inclusivity. That, like, when you come to a Basic Bitches show, it's a party and everybody's invited. Like, everybody is there, the doors are open, everybody comes in, everybody has a good time. Like, we're not trying to be too like earnest or too angsty, like, because hey, there's like plenty of reasons to be earnest and angsty, and like, we do write songs that are about a lot of those things, but we also want our shows to feel like a place where people can party, people can have fun, people can be respectful, people can dance and just like experience joy, you know, like that's what we want to sort of bring to the proceedings as a band.
What are one of the most recent or a few of the most recent shows that you've been to where you got to have that experience as a member of the audience as opposed to being on stage?
Good question.
I feel like I don't go to as many shows.
I mean, it's been a minute with the pandemic.
Yeah.
I mean, this feels like such an obvious response to this, but we've seen Lizzo twice at different points in her career.
That's true, yeah.
Really hugely different points in her career. The first time was like one of those PS1 summer shows, and she was on at like the second act.
Yeah, it was like 3 o'clock in the
afternoon. Headliner was Gang Gang Dance. It was the weirdest collection of bands.
Gang Gang Dance. Wow.
Yeah.
Gang Gang Dance and Lizzo on the same PS1 bill. That sounds right, yeah. Like a fever dream.
I'm trying to remember who was between them. It was the strangest collection of bands. And like, she got the whole place going. I mean, there were people on balconies in some of those weird apartment buildings that overlook the courtyard that were like out dancing, like people that weren't even technically in the courtyard, we're having a great time. I would definitely say Liz. I mean, then we saw her at Brooklyn Steel.
Right.
And it was a remarkably similar vibe, despite it being huge and yeah. having so many more people on stage with her. And everyone was just there for her. And it was, you know, a much bigger deal. It sounds funny for Lizzo to be my reference because it's nothing like how we sound. But
I mean, we have a lot of musical touchstones in our own, like, in what we listen to and how it informs how what we sound like. And sometimes there is no correlation. I don't know. I mean, we saw Screaming Females last year or the year before last at the garden party. And I've said this on multiple things before. I was like very late to the party with Screaming Females, but like that was the first time I had seen them. And I was like, oh my God, where have I been? Like, how have I not? Oh, but you know what? Better late than never. And like, I had a really great time there. That was a good show. Like the crowd was so happy and so pumped. And like Screaming Females are just have done such an amazing job of like staying so true to their DIY like ethics. And I think that really translates to the crowd. Like the crowd always feels like a part of their crew, like a part of their tribe and a part of their community. So I definitely got a cool, like warm, fuzzy feeling from being a part of that. And like, that also makes me feel like that's what we try to do is just like bring that sense of like, we're all here in this room together, experiencing this at the same time. Like that's where the love comes from, you know?
That's so awesome. Those are two like really cool examples. I didn't like Lizzo used to sing backup for Harmar Superstars. Someone weird so like that.
Weird random thing. She gets like I think an EP or maybe a full length with Sadie Dupree from like way back. There's just like she's been around and making incredible music for such a long time.
Yeah. 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 She's like, I don't think a lot of people realize that. Like she was like a seasoned vet by the time she gained indie cult status, like before she was huge, like, and yeah, that's really cool. It is interesting going to shows like as once you're like sort of in the industry, as it were, to whatever degree, because then you're just like analyzing everything going on when you're at the show, like what is this, what's going on with the PA system, what is that person doing, what's the bartender doing, like
yeah. I mean, I, for many years, like, worked for a group of record labels, so I got to see, like, I've seen all kinds of people on, you know, it was incredible, but working for the music, like, working in the music biz like that, I think is also probably something that informed our ethos now, because in 2023, the only thing that a label can really do for you that you can't do yourself is throw money at things. They don't have any more of an idea than anyone else does. And I'm telling you that as someone who was there, who sat through numerous meetings of like 50-year-old white dudes going, what is TikTok? How do we get on TikTok? Or like Vine? Oh, they were like trying to pay teenagers to like use music on Vine and they don't know. Like for years they had it sewn up. You know, you get the X amount of press pieces and you make sure you have enough records in the right record stores and that's it. And ever since the internet, really, they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, I've been in a few of those meetings with those industry bros and it's really fascinating to watch them overspeak.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess like you said that you have like a variety of, you both have a variety of different musical touchstones. I'm wondering like what some of the pillars of those touchstones are. For example, like one of mine is like as a child, I feel like Fall Out Boy was my gateway band, as it was for like any millennial to Gen Z. But what are some of like the biggest people who have left an imprint on you and the way you make music?
I mean, I'm a little older than you. Fall Out Boy was when you were a kid. But there's a stream of things that are about to come out of my mouth that are going to seem very desperate. But my parents were not big music people. They listened to the radio, but like they didn't have a big music collection or anything. So I got a lot of things from the radio. So I had my boy band periods and whatever. And then there was like some moment when I was about 12 where I just went, Bon Jovi is the best band I've ever heard in my life. And this wasn't classic Bon Jovi. This would have been like 1994 Bon Jovi. But there was a Best Of compilation came out, and it was the best thing that had ever happened to me. And then I was in the UK when Britpop happened, which was kind of incredible because up until that point, even British musicians were singing in American accents.
Mm.
Everything was incredibly American leaning. And then suddenly there was this movement that was like, no, we're going to speak in our own accents. Or in the case of certain people, we put on accents and act like we're a lot poorer than we are. Just talking about Blur.
The second I heard that, like, I immediately sensed like, oh, here we go. Talking about country houses and
pop. Yeah, exactly. And then, like, I went through a long, like, I'm a fucking punk. I only buy music that I've seen in a fanzine period. And then I got a record store job in college and, like, got a broader catalog of things to listen to. So it's funny because I was very much like, when I was like 17 to 21, let's say, I was like, no, actually I'm a fucking punk and I only like punk stuff. And it's really like specific British punk, and but like happening now, not classic punk. And then now, or I guess something happened to me in my late 20s, really, where I was like, there's so many things that I love that are not cool in the slightest. I actually think that working in the music industry did this to me because it made me just be like, oh God, I've had to listen to cool music all day. I'm going to go home and listen to Cher. You know what I mean? Like, I got to listen to some incredible records before the rest of the world did. But I was really that job really beat me over the head with like what industry people think is cool music. And some of it is great. And I really did work with some artists that I love, but a lot of it I truly hated. And like, it kind of spun me into this whole, you know, like there's no such thing as a guilty pleasure world. This was really freewheeling.
Yeah. Well, you've got, I would say you have a like pop music sensibility that I did not have, which has been interesting to me because now there's so many things that I can get into that I didn't before. But I can say with absolute certainty that like the White Stripes changed my life. Like Meg White changed my life. But I also was very lucky to have like a cool single mom in the 90s who would like sneak me into punk shows in Boston. So like, I saw the White Stripes several times, like when I was 15 years old. Like I got to see Sleater-Kinney. The first time I saw the White Stripes, they were opening for Sleater-Kinney. And like, I saw The Gossip in a basement in Boston. And like, I saw Bratmobile and The Gossip. And I loved the Donnas when I was a kid. Like I just, you know, I really, it was amazing for me as like a chubby, nerdy young girl to see all these like cool, tough, queer, like punk women just like absolutely kicking ass regularly. So that like really informed how like I saw myself when I started to play music. It was like, I want to like, yeah, this is what I want to do. It's like garage, it's rock, it's punk, it's like queer and female led. And like, that's what I want to do. And that's what I want to be. But I lived in Providence, Rhode Island for a spell, and like grungy, noisy, like dirty metal is like very much a thing in Providence. So like I picked up a little bit of that. And, you know, then since we've been together, I've also grown. I now also appreciate Cher and the Pointer Sisters and like, you know, a lot of this stuff that I just like, it's on the radio all the time. So it's like mass pop culture garbage. I don't like it. But now I'm like, I appreciate songwriting from a different perspective and like the craft of music making and production in a way that I didn't really think about before, because my reference points were always the bands I saw live when I first started like making conscious decisions about what kind of music I liked and what resonated with me. So that's sort of where my path has led. But I think we've both like we meet in the middle in a lot of really interesting ways. And there's a lot of overlap in the kind of music that we both like, which I think lends itself well to the way that we write songs now, because it feels a little more surprising and unexpected than, you know, we were just like trying to be the White Stripes.
That's so cool. I love that you mentioned the Donnas too, because they were like, what was so cool about them was they were essentially like an all female band playing cock rock, basically, like hair metal.
They very much.
Like, if you listen to those lead guitar lines, that's like Def Leppard Worship. And I think that's
Too
so
Fast
cool.
For Love. Like, yeah, it's all of that. It's all of that like 80s hair metal, like just very like, fuck you, like this, we're doing this now. So I always love that about them as well.
And what's interesting too, like you mentioned about pop music and how like interesting it is for like things that like big time producers can take from different pockets and like congeal into this one thing that has mass appeal. That's something I've been very fascinated by lately. Like, for example, like Kelly Clarkson, since you've been, I'm so sorry, this necessitates bringing up a Dr. Luke, trigger warning, but since you've been gone was initially like the producers trying to write a stroke song.
Yeah.
And Kesha had like her big break when this trash party culture that we're referring to now as indie sleaze was sort of like brewing with blog house producers and stuff at these parties and stuff. And one of the biggest indie cult figures at the time was Uffy. And as soon as people heard Kesha's TikTok, like anyone who was tuned into the blog house scene was like, this is just The Party by Uffy and Justice. But it's in its weird way, that is like a skill, which is like being able to repackage something like that. But it's also kind of fascinating. Like, and also, who are some of your favorite New York bands at the moment?
So it's any New York bands, like
any New York
band. Old classic, whatever.
I mean, Abuds.
Good question.
Desert Sharks just put out a new record.
Mm-hmm.
We love those ladies. Who else? Like Free to Kill.
I mean, we played, so there's a band called Plastic Passion, who I used to play with a lot, like early on in New York City when I was playing in bands, and I hadn't seen any of them in years. And we played a show with them, like a Pride Party rooftop show, and they played, and I was like, oh my god, that's right, y'all are great.
Yeah, they are great.
You are so good. Super tight, really fun, and like also have a very cool, like inclusive, it's a party and we're all invited, like let's just like dance and have fun. As far as like classic New York bands go, I mean, you know, I've gotta say like Blondie and Patti Smith and Television and the IAs, you know. I think I've actually been listening to Television a lot lately, and I don't really know where it came from, but all of a sudden it was just kind of in a loop in my head. It's like,
yeah,
why is Marquee Moon so good?
It is so good. It just keeps building and building. And then when you think it's reached a peak, it just keeps going. And you're like, oh, what is happening? Like, this is like the ocean. I'm afraid of the power it has over my body and how little control I have, but I also love it.
Like, you're along for the ride regardless. And it feels like it's so like out of control. And then all of a sudden it's just like right back. It's all right back in. It's like, everybody's on time. Everybody knew all along exactly where this was going. Like, it does.
All the way back to Janet.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, good. This is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been kind of in that for a minute, but yeah, I wish I had a better answer for like more of the like now, new and now New York City bands, but because we're living this upstate lifestyle.
Yeah. We are the only band.
We're the only band up here. So.
Do you guys know Scout Gillette?
I don't. Do you?
She's like a singer-songwriter-y dream, like French space pop kind of vibe. And cool. I can't say enough great things about Scout Gillette. She's incredible. She actually, her story is really interesting too, because she's from Kansas. And she grew up in like a very religious household. And when she made the move to New York, it was basically Sharon Van Etten who flew her out and got her coffee and was like, because she had sent her demos, not thinking much of it. And then all of a sudden she was being flown out to the city by Sharon wow. Van Etten, who was like, you should move to New York and make this a thing. Like, and yeah, now she's like a permanent fixture here. And she was one of the stars of South By this year. Mm-hmm. And she's doing great, which is awesome. I can't say enough great things about her.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. Good to know.
That's one of my favorite local people. And I also love that you mentioned Frida Kill too. We stan Frida Kill over here. They're yeah, awesome.
Totally. Jeanette actually photographed our wedding.
She did. Yeah. Yep. And I mean, I know Jeanette from like, from before band stuff from the photo community. So she was doing band photos for our wedding. She did band photos for my other bands. Like, you know, we've known each other. She's photographed shows that I played in. So when we saw that she was like starting a band, I think everybody really rallied around that because all of them have been a part of the scene for so long. So it's very cool.
With this new album, what was the biggest highlight of throwing it together? Because you recorded it on the East Coast as well, right?
Yeah, we recorded it in Baltimore with Jay Robbins, who was, well, he was in Jawbox and he was in Burning Airlines, which is, I feel like, less of a known band, but I adored Burning Airlines. And he still releases music under his own name. And I guess I did kind of know that he had a studio, but like he worked with there's a band we love from DC called Buckeye, who are Get Better Records, and he recorded their last record. And he also did, I think, the last X-Hex record.
And I think he's done the last two War on Women albums. So like, highly recommended, obviously.
like noticing, oh shit, it's Jay Robbins yeah. who's recording these. So
I'm like, wow, that's a thing you could do. Like we could just have Jay Robbins produce our record.
Yeah. And the studio that he owns has been a studio for longer than it's been his. And like a bunch of classic 90s, like what we would at the time call real emo bands, like Sunny Day Real Estate and bands like that, recorded in that space. And anyway, so we just got on the call with him.
Yeah.
And we're like, we want to come record with him, with you. And we were a little nervous, but it turns out he's like the nicest man in the world. I don't know why he wouldn't be, but you never know with music guys. And yeah, it was great. I mean, I've recorded in all kinds of places. Yeah, I've recorded same. In basements, that place in Jersey, which I feel like was a squat. You know,
I recorded here,
but that was the most like legit studio I think I've ever recorded in. And it's also the first time that we had bothered to make like demos, like record versions of the songs in a like more than just a phone in the rehearsal room way before we went in the studio, so we could think about backing vocals and yeah. where we want there to be like 20 guitars and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the vibe. And it was the first day we went into the studio was both my 40th birthday and the day that Roe v. Wade fell. Oof. So it was a very mixed emotions moment. But I think that kind of fueled the record in some ways. The last song on the record, House of Basic Bitches, was not fully written before we went in. We had like, we had the chorus and we had basically the music, but we didn't have the verses down. And we were like, we'll see how it goes. It's either a 9-song record and this is nothing, or like we'll work it out while we're there. And I think that what we came up with was very much informed and, what am I trying to say?
Yeah, to say it was inspired by the moment feels a little strange, but it definitely sort of took cue from that moment, you know, and understanding like we want to cultivate an experience as a band where everyone is invited and everyone is involved, but we also want to like say how we feel about living through this moment and recording an album in this moment. Like, you know, we can't just let things go unacknowledged. Like, this affects us as a human species. But, you know, this is our house, and we felt like we're laying it down right now. Like, this is the house of Basic Bitches. What does that mean to us? What does that mean to people who come into this with us? So yeah, I mean, I think being in a studio for those 4 or 5 days, like, honestly, I'm so glad that that's where we were, because it felt like such a safe space for us to work through that, to like work through this idea that, like, oh, do we not even have bodily autonomy anymore? Well, like, I'm going to sit in this room and I'm going to hit things and I'm going to yell for 4 days, and I'm going to like work out how I feel with it. And like, then we're going to come out and we're going to get to work, you know? But Jay was incredible. He really understood our sound, and he didn't try to make us sound like something we weren't. And I think that was something I was concerned with. Like, we get this a lot as a 2-piece band. We'll play a show and people will come up to us, and it's usually like,
some dude
who's like, oh yeah, y'all are great, but like, do you ever think of having a bass player? Or like, you'd be so much better if you did this. And we're like,
it's not even,
well, more often he doesn't have a bass player,
right? We're like, we don't.
I would say more often than that, it's, hey, I could play bass for you.
Do you guys need a bassist? We don't. So there was none of
just
that energy.
Tell me how you really feel. Like, you know, like, just tell me you need a dude in the band. So
right, I, yeah. So, we all know what you're saying. But there was like none of that energy from Jay Robbins. You know, he was very much understood what we sounded like and was so good about like giving us really helpful suggestions, but also being like, hey, take it or leave it. Like, but what if we try this? It was never a like, let me just tap this out for you. He was never just like trying to write my drum parts or trying to like lay down a riff on the song. He does play tambourine on one song, and yeah, we will credit where credit
is due. He turns out to be an absolute master of a mid-tempo tambourine, which is quite hard to do and keep it going.
But with the whole time we felt really supported, we felt really heard, we felt really understood, not only as a band, but, you know, as women, as queer women, like, we really felt acknowledged and given space to make this record sound as good as it possibly could and as much like us as we are. So all of that was the highlights. Also just being in Baltimore, because Baltimore rules. So I'm not from there, but I love it there.
That's awesome. And as a closing question, what does the rest of the year have in store for Basic Bitches?
Well, we, you know, the record's been out a week, 8 days at this time of recording.
What a whirlwind.
So we're playing a bunch of shows is our main focus. I mean, I don't know when this is coming out. I don't know if it's like not great to be throwing dates out if it's not going to come out later, but the next city one we're playing at Mercury Lounge on Memorial Day.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll be in New York City for Memorial Day, but we're trying to hit like the upstate college towns right now. So we're playing in Binghamton, and then we'll be in New Paltz, and then
Troy.
And yeah, then we've got a couple of dates in the city at the Mercury Lounge. And then we're doing a Johnny Thunders tribute birthday party show in July.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working on some stuff, you know, where it's cool to have a quality versus quantity approach to shows now. Like, I would rather play fewer shows and have them all be bangers than play 15 shows in a month.
I think we're going to try and do at least one more video as well. We've done like 3 videos leading into the record. And I mean, I would make videos for all the songs. Why not?
Yeah. So yeah, I think we're just excited to be out and be playing shows and playing these new songs, although they don't feel new to us anymore, but it's still very exciting to be playing them. So yeah, just getting out, meeting the people. That's the plan.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on once again.
Thank you very much for inviting us. Yeah. It was really cool to talk to you. And hopefully we'll see you at a show sometime soon.
Definitely. Well, have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you. All right, you too.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Sounding Out with Izzy, and a big thank you to Naomi and Crystal of Basic Bitches for joining me.
Their latest album, It Doesn't Matter If It's Cool, is available to listen to on all DSPs. Remember to subscribe and sign up for the mailing list on my YouTube channel and written blog, both under the name A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Give the podcast a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening, and I will catch you in the next episode of Sounding Out with Izzy. We'll be right back.